Hey, well, welcome, Harding parents. We're glad you can be with us today. Congratulations to the football team on a homecoming massacre, I guess you would call it. That's a good thing. We won't talk about the other teams in the state that have gone on. But hey, it was about 3 weeks ago where Susan and I were watching a miniseries. We always like these drama-type, spy-type series. And we were watching one about in the 60s of a guy named Eli Cohen, who was an Israeli spy who went into Syria and actually did such a good job spying that he actually became the defense minister in Syria. And the way that the series began is it shows Eli, who had, now spoiler alert, he had been caught. And before he had been hung before all of Syria, they had him post-tortured, and he was at a desk, and he was signing a truth statement about who he really was and all that he had done while he had been there and all the deception that had gone on. And then the next scene, it says 6 years earlier. And so the whole series is about how this spy infiltrated the Syrian government and began to spy for Israel. So the whole series is about how you worked up to that very end point. You know, and sometimes when you read Hebrews 11, it works just like that. It starts at the end, and you get this end picture. And Tyler talked last week really well about Jacob and how at the end of his life, he had a by faith moment. And it's the same with Joseph as well, that he as well, it starts at the very end of his life, and we're going to need to go back and figure out what exactly was going on and brought him to that point. But so we're going to be going back and forth from Hebrews 11 back to the end of Genesis, but this is what it says in Hebrews 11, 22. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. Now, to get a little bit more meat on that and to find out what exactly was going on, you go to Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25, and it said, Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And Joseph made the Israelites swear on an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid. Then you must carry my bones up from this place. Now, the reason this is such a big deal is because this is truly an assurance of things hoped for and a conviction of things not seen. I mean, he's talking about the Exodus. And the Exodus isn't going to occur for another 430 years. So he's banking, saying, carry my bones, not on something that he sees. He's banking it on something that is totally based on a promise of what God has said to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and now through him, and said, based on that, when it comes. And basically saying, I don't know when, I don't know how, but I do know this, God will be faithful to his word. He'll be faithful to his word. And when that happens, however long that is from now, you take my bones with you. You bury them in the promised land. And so, I mean, that's a big thing of faith. That's looking forward to something that he can't even see. It's just basing it on God's word. That's what faith is, the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. But my question is this, how did he get to that point? I mean, it didn't just all of a sudden come to him like that. He had to, faith is something that matures over time. So how did he get there? And to understand that, you and I, we need to go back into Joseph's life to see how God was working in his life, forming his faith as he went along. And Tyler alluded last week to the breakdown of Genesis and how it has four big events and then four big people. And they're not equally weighted. You know, when you look at Genesis, it's interesting. It zooms over creation like a rocket ship. I mean, 3% of the book is creation. Just 3%. And then when it goes from the millennium, from Adam to Abraham, it's like, an Air Force fighter that's going over, and it's a little slower, but it's still just speeding over this thing. And over that millennium, it's about a 15% of the book. And then it's like it takes into a helicopter and switches to a helicopter through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And it'll hover for a while, and it'll come down and show us a big event. Then it keeps going, and it'll hover a little bit and show us down. But when it comes to Joseph is 30% of the book.
30%
is given to one guy. And it's as if you landed a helicopter, you got in a rental car, and we said, okay, now we're going to just drive through Joseph's life. And as we drive through Joseph's life, we're going to begin to see what exactly was going on and how we can learn about faith as we go through this. And in Scripture, more doesn't necessarily mean better. It's not like Joseph's life is 27% better than creation. You know, it's not weighted like that. But what it is saying is, take note. There is something going on in Joseph's life, particularly when it comes to us learning about faith, that we can really, really learn from. And so it slows it down. It takes us through and it shows us. And in the beginning of the series, we've talked about the fact that there's three things to faith. Faith is relationally driven. In other words, as you know Christ and as you get closer to Christ, faith will naturally result from that because you love him and you trust him, which then leads to a trust in his word. And you'll take God at his word because you're in relationship with him. And when you're in relationship with someone and you can trust their word, then it just becomes natural. And then what happens after that is just natural that faith is an action step. And as we take action steps into the unknown and into things that we can't see. And faith, I think, is God-given. And we learn faith through our own experiences and through maybe hard times that we go through, and faith gets sharpened. But I think we also learn faith from others. And others go through things, and we learn how they walk through it. And that's why we read the Bible, and that's why we read Hebrews 11. And that's why it was supposed to be an encouragement to the readers of this, is because they were like, look, you're going through a tough time, but look what the saints before you have gone through, and apply this to your life. But faith also is not a one-stop shop. It's, what I mean by that is it's not that we're all going to go through the same things, and faith is going to nuance itself differently in each of our lives. In other words, what I'm saying is there's going to be things that I'm going to have to go through that you won't necessarily have to go through. And there'll be things that you go through that I won't have to go through. Now, at the baseline of all of them, there's some common threads of trusting God through it, but the specifics of it, relating it to a specific circumstance, all of us, because all of our lives are different, have to apply that and take that general root and go, okay, what is this? And take that common thread and apply it to the very thing that we're having to go through. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to tackle this in Joseph, because I think what Joseph shows us is his faith had to be built because God gave him a huge promise in the beginning and he wasn't ready to fulfill it. And there was faith moments that apply to all different types of life as we go through it. And hopefully they'll apply to us. So here's the four things. There's faith to trust God when plans don't work out. There's faith to trust God when you do the right thing and it costs you. There's faith to trust God when life goes bad and it just gets worse. And there's faith to trust God for the past, the present, and the future. And so let's just start with this first one. For the faith to trust God when plans don't work out. You know, it's interesting with Joseph, just to give you a little background. Joseph was one of those, oops, we didn't really plan you babies. Okay, he came later in life for Jacob and Rachel. And because of that, because there was such a span between the another one, the one that was born before him and Joseph, there was such a span that he came later in her life. I mean, it's shown in the scriptures that Jacob favored Joseph. He favored him, gave him a royal coat of many colors, and just did things for him that he didn't do to the other kids. You know, part of it, I think, is just, you know, if you're parents, you know what this is like. You know, the first one, you're all like, okay, here's what you do. I got this down. Second one, you're like, oh, whatever. Third one, you're like, whatever. You know, you're just trying to work through life and, you know, and make it happen. And maybe they're a little bit more relaxed. But what's going on here is that Joseph knew he was favored. And his brothers knew he was favored. Scripture makes it very clear that they felt it as well. And you know, human relationships and family dynamics, if they're siblings and one of them knows that I'm favored over the others, it's a recipe for some disaster. And this is exactly what's going on. And so Joseph makes some mistakes early on. things that when we look at it, we go, might not have been the wisest thing to do. So Joseph, the first thing he does is he tattletales on his brothers. They're out in the field, they're working. Joseph comes back from the field and he's like, Dad, man, Reuben is lazy. I tell you what, Judah, he just cuts corners all over the place and he gives a bad report to his dad about his brothers. It didn't go well. And in Genesis 37:4, here's what his brother said. They hated him and they could not speak a kind word to him. You can see where this is going, but we're not done. Joseph makes mistake number two. He had a dream from God, and it was legitimate. I mean, this dream came from God. In Genesis 37:7 says, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. You can just sense this favored son going, isn't that cool? You know, in the common sense would tell you, look, if your brothers already hate you, telling them a dream that they're all going to bow down to you is not going to go well. And it didn't. And it said in Genesis 37:8, they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Now, you think that would be enough, but we're not done. Joseph makes a third mistake. He has another dream, and it's legit. It's from God. And guess who he told it to? His brothers. Listen, he said, I had another dream. And this time, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. In Genesis 37:9. It didn't go over well. His brothers were jealous of him, it says in Genesis 37:11. Now, if you take hatred and you mix it with a little bit of jealousy, I mean, you have a recipe for murder, which is exactly where this thing is headed. And so one day, Jacob says, hey, Joseph, go out and check on your brothers and see how they're doing in the fields and what's going on. And his brothers saw him from a distance, and they said, oh, here comes that dreamer. And here's what they said in Genesis 37:19. Let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. Now, two brothers had a conscience. And they said, there's no way that we can kill him. Don't kill him. Just throw him in the well. Let's not kill him. Just throw him in the well. And so they did. They threw him deep into this cistern. And it's interesting how the scripture describes it. It says that the cistern was empty. Which when I look at that, I go, that just means there wasn't a soft landing. So when they threw him in this empty cistern, he's down there and it hurts. And then they weren't done. They decided, let's not just leave him there, one of the brothers said. And some Midianite merchants were coming by, headed on their way to Egypt. And they said, well, let's sell him. Let's sell him as a slave to these Midianite merchants. They'll take him to Egypt. He'll be so far gone, we won't ever have to deal with his dreams again. So they sell him. They take off his robe, and they sell him to these merchants. So he's riding in this caravan with these people he's never met, going to a place he's never been, never knowing whether he's going to see his dad again or his family. He's sold. They take his coat. They kill a goat, and they put the blood on his really nice robe that he was wearing. They take it back to his dad, and they say, look, your son was killed by a ferocious animal. Jacob just immensely is just grieving through this whole thing. Now, I can just imagine while he is on that caravan to Egypt, just as like, look, I mean, where am I going? Where is this? What happened to this dream? I mean, God, when I was in the well and I'm, you know, you said that they were going to be bowing down to me, but it's not them bowing down to me. Maybe I mistook it, but they're looking down at me. And now I'm sold into slavery and I'm going to a place I don't know. How are they going to bow down to me now? They're not even going to be around. I don't even know if I'll even see them anymore. Were his dreams from God? Yes. Were they planning, were they going out the way that God thought, what he thought they would? No. It was going exactly the opposite way he envisioned it. And Joseph then had to trust God when his plans weren't working out or weren't going the way that he envisioned. Now, how about you? Have you been trusting God in the midst of your plans and maybe they're not working out the way that you thought they would? It's not going according to the way that you envisioned it. You know, when God speaks to us and he tells us things, and maybe there's great things he tells us he wants us to do, and we right away and envision, okay, here's how it's going to look. And it's not going anything according to that. I think we've all done that. We've all had it happen. And what we learn from Joseph is that God is faithful and he's working, and we need to trust him that he has a better plan. He'll be true to his word. And that's why Paul in Romans 8 says God works all things together for good. To those who love him are called according to his purpose, he says he will work it through. Joseph at the beginning needed to have an understanding that while God says something, he needs to hang on to that, even though it's not working out the way that he thought. Secondly, we need to have the faith to trust God when you do the right thing and it costs you. Now, it just so happened, as God is sovereignly working through this, that Joseph was sold to Potiphar, which was Pharaoh's captain of the guard. So he's sold into slavery. And the scriptures tell us that the Lord was with Joseph in all that he did. And he blessed Potiphar's house because of it. And Potiphar knew something is good about this guy, and having him around is great. So Potiphar then, I mean, of all things, Potiphar puts him in charge of everything in his household. I mean, and this is what Genesis 39, 4 or 5. It says, when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. And Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. I mean, things are going pretty well. He went from being at the bottom of a well to managing all of Potiphar's household. But something went wrong. Potiphar had a wife who was very attracted to Joseph. Genesis makes it very clear in 39:7. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Puts it plainly out there. Joseph refused. And I think it's interesting his reason for not doing it. He said, "How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" Maybe he wasn't like, "Oh, if I do this, I'm going to get caught." You know, he says, "No, this isn't a sin against anybody. This would be the sin against God. How could I do that?" But this wasn't a one-time event. She was relentless. And day after day after day, she came toward him and said, come to me. You need to lie with me. I mean, look, greater men have fallen for far less. And day after day after day, he has this until one day when Joseph is in their house and she plans something. By this time, she is irritated and she's angry, and in the true wife comes out, and kind of the Cruella de Vil thing, and she turns on him and she grabs at him and grabs his coat. He gets out of his coat and runs away. And when her husband Potiphar comes back, she says, "Look at what your servant has done. This servant that you brought into this house, he has tried to take advantage of me." And Potiphar, to say the least, was ticked. And he threw Joseph into prison. Now, if we could read in between the white space, in between the lines of the scriptures, this had to be a major blow to him. I mean, this was a new level of trust. Can I trust God even when I do the right thing, the thing that he would want me to do, and it gets thrown, and I get thrown into prison for it? I mean, it'd be like saying, I did what you wanted to do, God, and everything went south. It wasn't like I got blessed all of a sudden, and now I'm just even in a greater position. It's like I followed you, and things just got worse. I mean, Lord, I did what you want. You can just imagine him saying, I did what you want. I mean, and I honored you in this situation, and I get thrown into prison. Is this what you get for following you? And the scriptures tell us that the Lord was with him. And now I think that obviously that means the Lord was with him, but I don't think that means that he didn't struggle. And I can just imagine him sitting in that cold cell going, what the heck? I didn't do anything to deserve this. I mean, there may be a lot of things I'm guilty of, but it's not that one. I did the very thing I was supposed to do, and I honored God in it, and now I'm in prison. I mean, how about you? Can you walk with God by faith and do what God desires, even when you know it might cost you? Even when following him costs you, even if you accepted Christ and you thought, well, my life is going to get better, and all of a sudden it just seems like it's getting harder. And nothing's turning out the way that you had scripted it. I can remember the first time I had to face this as a young believer when I was in college. I worked at a gym in downtown Missoula, Montana. And it was a great gym, you know. It wasn't one of the biggest ones in towns, but it was just a great one. And guys would come in and lift, and they had jacuzzis, they had different things. And so I would just kind of manage the front desk, and things were going well. And over the course of time, you know, just kind of built up a good reputation there and had good conversations with people. And certainly as time went on, conversations turned to spiritual issues. And there were some people that I didn't force on anybody, but in the course of conversations, they talk, they would know that I was a Christ follower, and they'd say, well, how has he changed your life? And I would tell them, and in the course of over about a 2-year period, a couple people came to Christ. Well, somehow it got back to the owner. And the owner sits me down and he goes, look, if you're going to work here, you're doing a great job. I can trust you with anything, but you cannot talk about your faith anymore here. And I was like, I just remember thinking, I mean, what do I do? You know, and there's part of me was like, well, just don't say anything. Just stay quiet and just, you know, whatever. And I was like, well, you know, I will work hard for you and I will do everything that you want me to do. But if you're asking me that in the natural course of conversations to never talk about Jesus, that's impossible. I mean, it's going to be natural. And, well, I was let go. And I can remember thinking, you know, Lord, I'm doing the very thing that you'd want me to do. And people were even coming to Christ. And this was a really fun job. And I don't have it anymore. And can you trust me even though it costs you? Has your faith cost you anything? Have you had to step out and trust God in situations where you just say, no, Lord, I'm going to be obedient to you, and I'm going to honor you, and I'll let the circumstances play out the way that you want them to? See, I think each one of these situations for Joseph, it was another situation where it was building up his faith for what God truly wanted him to do. But how about this third one? This is faith to trust God when life goes from bad to worse. Now, this one might make us a little uncomfortable, but I think we all have a threshold of faith. And at times, I think it gets pushed to the limit. Maybe some of you know what I mean and some of you don't. And it's, Lord, I can trust you for this now, and I think we all have this. Yeah, okay, I can trust him for this. Maybe I'm having to wait a certain time, or there's a certain thing I'm going through, and it's still within my comfort zone. But then it gets to that point where it's beyond your comfort zone. It's beyond your threshold of where you could normally trust him. And you go, Lord, I'm really uncomfortable. I'm really being pushed to the point where I'm now wrestling with thoughts of questioning you. I mean, have you been pushed there? To where you're now going, I'm not really sure why or what or what's happening. And this is when the cultural gospel will come in, and it'll say some kind of nice poster size saying. It'll say, God will never give you more than you can handle. That's not the gospel. Not if you read the scriptures. He'll never give you more than you can handle with him. But he'll give you way more than we can handle on our own. And so Joseph is in prison. And now there's this two guys that get thrown into prison as well, a cupbearer and a baker. They both somehow, you know, the cupbearer is the one who drinks the juice or the wine, I guess, before the king and make sure that if it's poisonous, he dies, not the king. Not a great job, but hey, you're second to the king in that. And so he's there. Somehow he ticks off the king. His baker ticks off the king. They both get in prison. They both have dreams. And both of them are disturbed by the fact that they don't know what this dream means. Joseph has been given a gift, and he can interpret dreams. And so he does, and he interprets the dreams and tells them what they are. Basically, the cupbearer got a positive, you know, response to his dream. The baker got a not-so-good response to his dream. They both became true, and they were fulfilled. And the cupbearer basically makes it out of prison, and he's back before the emperor. And all that Joseph asked him, look, I just give you one thing to do. I've given you favor here. I've interpreted your dream. Just remember me. And when you get out of here, tell them I'm here. And here's what he says. When all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh. And you can tell kind of the angst here. And get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews. And even here, I've done nothing to deserve being put in this dungeon. Can you sense the angst in that? I mean, there's this sense in which Joseph has had some time to think in prison. Well, first of all, I didn't even deserve to be on a caravan. And second of all, now I'm in prison and I don't really even deserve to be here. And this, in just the injustice of it all, and who would blame him? But the cupbearer gets reinstated to his position. And then you get these two lines in the scripture that are just so interesting, but they say a lot. At the end of chapter 40, in the very beginning of chapter 41, here's what it says. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Not a great time to get amnesia. He totally forgets that Joseph interpreted his dream. And then it says, and when 2 full years had passed, I mean, again, if we can read between the white space here, this is one of those moments where you go, you got to be kidding me. Joseph's sitting in prison, 2 more years? What an injustice. This isn't 2 more weeks. This is 2 more years. No, and we get the advantage of looking at it and going, we know it was just going to be 2 years. Joseph didn't know how long his memory was going to be lapse. He was probably thinking, I could be in here forever. He's got this serious case of amnesia, and I don't know if he'll ever remember what I did for him, and so I don't know if he'll ever get out of here. And I think at this point, he had to be wondering, I mean, was he just imagining things when he got this dream, when his brothers would be bowing down to him? I mean, I think the moon and the stars thing now were just kind of fading off into the sunset. And he's like, did you really say that, Lord? Was that really for me? And I got to ask a question. How about you? Have you ever experienced things when it's going from bad to worse? Have you been pushed out of your comfort zone? Maybe waiting for healing and it just gets worse. Maybe you've prayed a prayer and instead of getting better, it just gets worse. Maybe you've even thought, you know, I don't even remember signing up for this when I came to Jesus. I mean, I'm just being real. And then I don't remember signing up for this. You know, many of you know, Susan and I have been through much in the way of chronic pain over these years, and she's endured a ton. Our journey has been one that has been incredible as God has shown himself faithful in it, but it's also been one in which it has pushed us to limits of which we never thought we could go through. And for many years, we prayed and prayed and prayed, and it just seemed like we weren't getting anything. It was just silence. And then finally, 4 years ago, God did something, and we found an answer, and we got it, and she started to come out of it, and we were just making traction in things until about 2 months ago, things just started to go worse again. And she started to feel this pain again. And so she went in the doctor, and the doctor says, okay, I need to go back in here, and I need to do some surgery. So 4 weeks ago, she had surgery, and she says, I think I got it, and I'm making a long story really short here, but they think they got it, and we're like, okay, we'll just get through the recovery of the surgery. And that was about 5 weeks ago, but things weren't getting better, and she was just, and her stomach was just becoming distended, and she was in pain, and we're racking our brains going, what in the world is going on? This doesn't seem to be healing the way, and we're going through all the emotions like, oh, come on, what is going on? You got to be kidding me. We're doing this again, and all these things are going on, and we're experiencing this thing. And so we're just going to a test this week, and now she has some rare thing in her intestine that usually happens in kids 3 and younger. But she has it. It's very rare. And now we're doing tests to see this Thursday to see what kind of surgery is next. And we're both going, okay, now wait a minute. Lord, we've been praying about this a long time. And we've been journeying through this thing. And Tom's, it just seems like it's just getting worse rather than getting better. And it's pushing us, to a level. But, and we're good, and the greatest thing is we're good together in this. And God is helping us in this. But there's times when life is reduced to day by day, and sometimes moment by moment. And I would say we're now in the moment by moment, and we got enough for today, Lord. And you've been faithful today. And we're going through it. Susan and I both said, about a week ago, we both said we threw a pity party, but nobody showed up. And especially the Lord didn't show up. And so he's just like, no, you trust me in this. Will you trust me in this? But will you trust me even though it's going from bad to worse? When the Lord asks you to trust him and it's going from bad to worse. I'm talking about times when, from a human perspective, it just makes absolutely no sense. But yet you find yourself right in the middle of it. These are the moments that I think faith just gets tested and faith gets refined and faith just moves forward. So all of that on our part, because we're in the midst of it and we haven't shied away from telling you, this isn't a story where everything is going great right now. I would say it's not, but we're trusting God in the midst of it. So you can just pray if the Lord brings you to mind that on Thursday, I just pray for clarity, that we would have clear understanding of what it is that we can do to get her the help that she needs. That's the biggest prayer. But let me go to the last one. Faith to trust God for the past, the present, and the future. The cupbearer's memory finally got jogged because Pharaoh had a dream. And he went, oh, yeah, you have a dream. Nobody can interpret it. I was in prison. There was a guy who interpreted my dream, and I was supposed to tell you about that 2 years ago. And I'm just remembering it. And so the whole story is that Joseph then comes up. He interprets Pharaoh's dream. Pharaoh then is basically just saying, man, he just gets favor. And here's what it says. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Let me say it again. The whole land of Egypt. A Hebrew is in charge of the whole land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and he put it on Joseph's finger and he dressed him in the robes of fine linen. He got a coat back and an even better one. And he put a gold chain around his neck. And then a famine happened, and everybody had to come to Egypt. And who came to Egypt? His brothers. And his brothers come to Egypt, and his brothers bow down before him, begging for mercy. And now, if you go back, and this would have been Joseph at the beginning when he had his dreams, and if it was the same Joseph and he hadn't gone through what he had, if that Joseph was carried here and hadn't gone through all that, this Joseph would have said, it's about time. I told you you were going to bow down, and now you're bowing down. But he'd been changed. He'd been changed in the fact that what he had gone through and the things that he wrestled with and trusting God and building his faith, he came to the point that when this came, instead of having his pride and his condemnation, he had mercy and he had grace. And this is what it says in that very famous line of Joseph: "Don't be afraid. I am in the place of God. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I'll provide for you and your children." Wow. And of course, what's going on here is God set this up so that Joseph would have the people come to Egypt. They would live there under favor for many years because of Joseph's favor. And then they would go through some persecution because the next, you know, emperor of Egypt came in, who didn't know anything about Joseph, and he got afraid because the Israelites were all multiplying and they were building up. Why? Because God was multiplying his people so that he could take them to the promised land. And he knew that they wouldn't intermarry. So God had this plan, and he brings them here, and he had Joseph in the midst of it. See, if God is God, and he is, then we can faith. We can have the faith to trust him for the pain of the past, the uncertainties of the present, and the unknown of the future. That's what faith does. Faith trusts him with the pain that we have from our past, knowing that God is working through that, with the uncertainties of the present and the things that we don't know what are going on, and the unknown of the future. And so really, this detailed drive through Joseph's life is a love letter from the Good Shepherd, who by faith will guide us through life by faith. It's a reminder that whether it's bittersweet, good or evil, no matter what, how long it's lasted, he will not leave us alone. He is with us. He is working together for our good. He will be with us to the end. That's what God is doing in our lives, as he builds up our faith and says, "Will you trust me? Will you trust me when it even humanly doesn't make sense?" Let's take it home. Worship team, you can come up. You know, the beautiful thing about this is it points to even something greater. I mean, think about it. When you hear a story about someone being falsely accused, left to die, only to rise up to be in a position to save many, who does that remind you of? Jesus. Really, what's going on here is Joseph's story is a foreshadowing. It is a looking forward to a heavenly reality. It is pointing us to something greater. God sent his only son, his favored son, to die and to be raised again so that he could set many free. Joseph was just a mini picture of that. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I like what Tim Keller says. Jesus is the true and better Joseph who at the right hand of the king forgives those who betrayed him and uses his new power to save him. Well, what a big God we serve. And I'm just, this morning, I hope you just understand that he is fully worthy of our complete trust. From the pain of our past to the uncertainties of the present to the unknown of the future, he is worthy of our full trust. You know, we're going to have an opportunity. If you would like prayer this morning, I don't know how the Spirit has been stirring, but I'm going to have Billy and Angie Shelton, and during the song, they'll be over at the cross. And when we finish up, they'll be over there. If you would like to have prayer, I'll be over there too. If you'd like to pray, we would love to pray for you. If God is stirring something, just pray for me on this. We'd love to. Let's stand, sing our last song together.